This is an organic opening.
It's an
Okay.
organic opening. That's right. Yeah, okay. Well, I guess I'll get the suggestion. Hey, everybody, welcome back to the Comedy Fix. My name's Jamie. I'm here with Sam and Chris, as always. And today we are joined by the lovely Susan Messing. Hi, Susan. How's it going?
It's great. I'm thrilled to be here.
Yeah,
at the appropriate time.
At the appropriate time. So for those who are not on our email chain or our text thread or either of them, we were actually scheduled to have Susan on last week's episode, which scheduling conflict, something happened, no big deal. And so
no,
we rescheduled.
It was Labor Day, and there was probably a passive aggressive little shit in me that went, why am I talking about work on Labor Day? And then I just fucking missed it. I'm not going to say that I was doing anything important. I wasn't. I literally forgot, and I was a horrible person, which means that three people, you three handsome people, were just looking at me like, hey, bitch. And then I was so excited about getting it right. I got on yesterday only to discover that it was today.
What were you when? So you got on, you logged in yesterday. What
meeting
were you?
Starts tomorrow. Meeting starts tomorrow. It literally says your host will be here tomorrow. Yeah.
Great. Well, for those who weren't on earlier, Chris, but that's okay. We were actually having an interesting conversation. Susan was talking about the state of Chicago improv, and I'm actually really interested in your thoughts on that, Susan. So, you know, you don't have to re-say what you just said, but how is Chicago improv going?
Well, I think when the pandemic started, I think a lot of things, everything blew to the, you know, everything, everybody's wad blew. So IO closed, Second City went, you know, DOA for a while before, you know, after Andrew left and before the kids who created Grand Theft Auto bought it. And then Sharna said, I'm out. And I'm not saying that a lot of this stuff needed to happen. I mean, if you're going to burn something to the ground, do it big, right? But small theaters died. I mean, it was really, really hard. So what I'm watching right now is sort of a renaissance with the tinies. I think the annoyance still looks like the annoyance, thank goodness. Second City, it's hard for me to walk into. I wish I could more. I just feel like right now there's just not a great respect for the teaching there. So I feel like I just watched one of the ACE meetings with the lawyers from Second City, and it was depressing and debilitating. I just kind of watched it. It's just all language. You know, these people, like, to get a dollar raise a year, it's just gross. It's just gross. And then IO is now owned by three real estate investors who don't understand the art. And so the people who were hired to run it know what they're doing, but I don't think they have a lot of faith in that. So a lot of second guessing, a lot of exhaustion, a lot of scrambling. You know, it's the places people are telling me, like Logan Square Improv, it's a tiny venue where they're doing really well. And a bunch of small venues, maybe that's just what has to happen. Things kind of burn, you know, old systems burn to the ground and new ones come up. And my hope is that the art itself will be energized instead of even more of a schism. But I don't know. I mean, internationally, I think it's doing fine. I don't have an issue with Zoom. I did in the beginning. I was like, fuck you, Zoom. You know, my husband's dead and this is a pandemic and fuck you, Zoom. And then I thought, okay, asshole, why don't you just sit for a whopping 3 minutes and see if you can make up an exercise or two. And within 5 minutes, I had made up 10 exercises. And I was like, okay, bitch, let's time to reframe, refocus, all that good stuff. So a lot of me has to be talked into shit. But ultimately I still feel like there's kind of a use for my services. And while there is, I guess I'll be still doing improv. We'll see.
How's the annoyance doing?
The annoyance, you know, Jennifer Esselin is a goddamn rock star. She was the one really searching out the loans and making sure that the employees were paid. I mean, and has done absolutely the best she can. I mean, it's now loaded up with shows again. Occasionally I'll do one there too. You know, you just do what you can. I teach bits and pieces. So I'm not exactly sure what it is on a day-to-day, but I'd know that on the day-to-day it's difficult to maintain, but Jennifer and Mick are doing the best that they can. Absolutely. It's like the only one of those bigger theaters that I go, I still recognize you. I can still walk in and feel good instead of, is this okay? You know what I mean?
Do you have a regular performance slot anywhere?
You know what? I think they would give it to me. What happened was the Annoyance thought I'd go back to once a week, and I just couldn't even see myself doing that. So I said, what about once a month? And they said, oh, we can't make that work for the schedule. And I said, I got it. No worries, you know, because I don't schedule shit. That's rough. And then they started a new series called like some Legends series. And Jennifer turned to me and she said, you didn't know that we started the series because of you, so that you could rotate in. And I was like, oh, I didn't know that. If I had, I would have done something about it. But thank you. Thank you for making me a part of that. So when I say I'd like to do a show, they're really good about it. They just had another two series thing that Rachel and I did a show on the 2nd of September. Sorry, you're going to get dogs barking. But if you come here, you can get some food. No, it's not going to happen. But Rachel and I did a show that was so frightening. We always say we try to make it worse. And if you're lucky, we might make it worst. But this was like worsted. Like, it started with watching Nazis go down the street and landing at Disney World, and racism and sexism and anti-Semitic shit everywhere. It was a heavy show for a comedy. We landed on our feet, don't get me wrong, but I came off stage and I was like, I actually said to the audience afterwards, I think you might have seen the worsted show we've ever done.
Wow.
Wow. Yeah, I've been going to some dark places. I'm not saying that there's still not comedy involved, but sure. Lately I'm kind of like, man, it's a little more whimsical when I tour with John Lehrer, a brilliant, brilliant man who he created two shows, actually straight through improv. He might have been the person to crack the code the best on that. One's called 10 Items or Less for TBS, and the other one was called Quick Draw on Hulu. The actors have no idea what the plot is. None. They just come in and they improvise, and editing is a genius, isn't it? So
I had a callback for each of those, and I even tested for Quick Draw, but you know.
Oh, I'm sorry. You had been beautiful on Quick Draw.
No, thank you. Thank you.
But you like John, right? But you do like John Lehrer.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. He's great.
He's fantastic. So I've been touring a lot with him, and that's been interesting. Really good, really fun. We've done a lot in the States, but we've also done a lot out of the States. And
find that what's going on in your life or how you're feeling off the stage influences and or affects what's going on the stage? Is there a carryover?
Yeah, I wish that it wasn't that, but it sure is around that. I mean, look, everything you've ever seen on TV, you know, everything that you're thinking about in the news. And I have a feeling I had just seen that day, the Nazis marching right outside Disney World. And it probably just was somewhere in the recesses. I never know what's going to come out. I certainly never have a thesis statement, or I never think to myself, gosh, I'm going to talk about that tonight. But I am surprised at what comes out of my mouth. And it's always a discovery. And sometimes I'm like, no, well, you got to fuck that till it's dead. So God bless, right? So, yeah, it definitely. And also where I am in my life as a person. Sometimes when I gave less of a shit, like I said, my husband died at the top of the pandemic. And I was like, I give a shit about doing make-em-ups right now. Sometimes it's great. And sometimes you're like, no, I don't really care about any of that crap right now. Yeah. So I think people have to be patient with themselves. I know I've had to be. You know, you always think when you have a show that night, you're like, God, I've got a show that night. I want to stay awake. I want to be alert. All those things that you think about your physiological being, but that mental hump too, that people still have to kind of go up and in order to have a good time. But it's so bizarre that with all the amount of money that we've paid to study, the rehearsals, the classes, the shows, And we still have all these scenes that kind of are like, I don't want to do this, probably because that's where people are in their lives. And I'm going, I don't know. We need to have more of a mental shift on that, or maybe more mental support. You know, I don't know what that's about, but I'm diving in. So I figure there's got to be a point there somewhere, right? Or at least a sentence I just had.
That for sure.
Sentence. You're very patient. Very kind.
I mean, it resonates because I think that was part of why we started doing this podcast, right? And the Comedy Fix, and sort of seeing a lot of those kinds of shows and scenes and wondering if there's more there. And Jamie and I were lucky to have a class with you for the Annoyance Intensive. And one of the things I loved about it was it's going to be hard for me to explain this on the podcast, but like you just go into people's face with like spit, the little spit bubbles kind of a thing of just sort of like teasing. Yeah. You're doing it right now. And there's just such like a fun joy to that play, right? And that's not, I don't want to do thing. That's sort of like, I'm poking my older brother in the backseat of the car. And there's so much like clowning ideas that are going on right now. But I think at its core, it's just sort of like, let's just have fun. Let's play. Let's get away from our, I don't want to do this, and just mess with each other.
Well, I appreciate that you said that, Sam. But if you think about it, all this money, all this time, we're saying to people, go pursue joy, go have more fun than you've ever had. Oh, by the way, here's a list of rules. Not easy, right? Because who wants to fuck up the system? Who wants to be considered the kid who doesn't play well or isn't nice or whatever the fuck it is, or that's weird. And then especially if the improviser is in a scene as themselves, they're kind of screwed because they're just going to think that's weird and stupid anyway then. Because I don't know, I said this in class. I said, I finger point, judge, teach you how to do shit right, solve your problems, and kill comedy. That's what I do. So I don't want to play that. So I guess, you know what? I guess there is use for me in this world right now because my favorite thing to do is to deal with the frustrated improviser. That's like my favorite thing to do, is just to kind of remind you that I didn't start this to be bogged down in hell. And I'm not negating all the things that bring us to the table, whether it's death, illness, financial, constraints, all these things that bring us down every day. Politics, it's hard every day to go, okay, go have fun. But the more we can access that joy more often, I'd be a lot happier. You'd be a lot happier, because a lot of the stuff I say is pretty damn simple in class, isn't it? It's like, you're like so mad because it makes rational sense. It's the kind of shit that made you want to do this to begin with. You watch someone on stage and you were like, I either want to do that or I know I could do that. And then you start doing it and you were right to do it. And now your job is to be more right. I just can't live in a rule-based, thing. Even dealing with people's mental blocks or where they feel marginalized or shitty, I understand, especially with white guys, it's got to be a little weird right now, right? Because you feel like you're going through some sort of odd minefield, like you're afraid that you might say something wrong, or you're listening to bros on podcasts saying things like, we can't say stupid shit anymore. And I'm like, you can, there just might be ramifications, or let's find a way to protect this content so that people are able to laugh and other people don't feel marginalized and shitty. That's a balancing act that we have to go through as well. So you're like, but somebody said have fun, but then they said play correctly. Now be kind, now be this, now be that. Look, some of my characters, I'll come off stage and go, I can't believe who the fuck was that? It was you guys. Some of the times, like I said, I'll come off stage and I'll be like, I can't believe I was that person. I can't believe I just did that. Oh my God, I can't believe that. But again, I feel like it's protected by being, by improv for me is a sociological study of the human condition, good, bad, and ugly. So I feel like I'm exploring people and discovering what the scene is line by line versus I'm going to vomit a thesis and then we're going to fuck that game till it's dead. I think for people who really need a big pile of structure, I think that they like improv that has very rigid forms or that almost feels like a Mad Lib to them. They like that. I don't like that. I like putting you and me in a world and seeing what the fuck happens. That to me is so much fun. My joy is discovery. And I know its placement somewhere in my head, but I still think it's disgusting. You know what I mean? Like, I'll be like, you guys, there was lean cuisine in every scene. And they're like, Susan, you did that. And I went, I know, it's magic, right? I'm like, I'm so stupid, you know?
Yeah. So Susan, I know you're a big fan of this podcast and have listened to all the episodes.
Every single one. In my sleep too, which is why we're definitely crossing over. Yeah, definitely. I mean, improv fix. I mean, come on.
All right, yeah, comedy fix. That's right.
Whatever.
But one thing we've talked about a lot on this podcast is exactly what you're talking about is learning the rules. It's like there's, you know, the mantra, you have to learn the rules in order to break the rules.
Yeah, I don't like that statement. I fucking hate that statement.
Thank you.
I wish I liked it. Because it gives like this kind of status to people who have studied longer, when in fact, I've seen people who've never improvised a day in their life look as joyful and maybe even better than the people who are bogged down by the shit that's going on in their brain.
Totally. Because
having an imaginary hand slapping them the whole time, right? I don't know who came up with that. I feel like that was an excuse and justification for somebody writing a big fucking book about this is what it is. And then they don't do that. And somebody says, well, you just told me to do this. And then you did that. And somebody says, yes, but you got to know the rules before you break them. I find it highly condescending. I seriously do. I would love to find out who said it, because I bet I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt and say that their intentions were a lot better than that condescending mess that we were left with. Just like me saying something like, if you're not having fun, you're the asshole. You've heard that people have attributed that phrase to me because I've said it, but that phrase was for me. That phrase wasn't for somebody who's been getting bullied by a bunch of people or whatever the fuck it was that's going on in their life right now. That was for me saying the joy in my health starts and ends with me. I am responsible for my joy on stage. I can't blame Benny, who always, you know, touches his dick in every scene. I'm not going to blame Benny. Benny doesn't know better. I'm going to do even what Dell always said, treat each other like artists and heroes. I'll figure out a way to use it. Everything is reused, reused, recycled, and repurposed. We can always make this into art. I remember making a really stupid joke on stage one day about Homentaschen, three-sided Jewy pastry for Purim. It's kind of either got prune in it or like or apricot, and you're kind of like, seriously, that's your cookie? Trust me, it's okay, but it's not my favorite. Rugula beats it. Anyway, I've gone beyond the point. But the point being is that I made a stupid joke about it on stage, and I knew it was a joke, and I knew it was stupid. George, you must leave it. Look at this dog. This dog is trying to get a food. You see George?
Oh my gosh.
She's beautiful, isn't she? She's beautiful. Great.
Thank you.
But she's a great Pyrenees mix. She looks like a golden, but she's a great Pyrenees. She like has to follow you. But anyway, so I made that stupid joke thinking, oh man, I made this stupid joke. And anytime I make a stupid joke, I will rub my face into it until it turns into the truth. So that is what I will do. But oh my God, I will bring her food.
Let me ask my follow-up question is, you know, how do you teach improv to people who have never done it before? Like what are you teaching them? You know, everybody's obsessed with these curriculums and trying to give you these rules. Could you just have people, 10 people off the street, and then bring them in and start and just give them nothing? Or how do we restructure the system to kind of align with what you're talking about?
Well, I mean, people love their systems, and what happens is they create these rigid systems, and then I come in because everybody's frustrated. I don't usually create them. I know where they came from. I know it came from a good place. It just went out of control. What happened is somebody taught you something you loved, and then you went, oh my God, I don't want to fuck that up. It makes so much rational sense to me. And so you kind of go by that. And then one day you become a teacher, and now you want to teach it the way that you learned it from your teacher that you loved so much, and you don't want to fuck it up. But the irony, the weirdness is that, like, for example, about a month and a half ago, I was in Seattle. Unexpected Productions had their 40th anniversary and had John and I out, and Mick and Jen came out as well. And Mick is my teacher and he's my director. He's the one who cracked the code for me. I was like, oh my God, this makes so much rational sense to me. And he was doing a talk back. And one of the things he said is, you know, I really ascribe to a very strong point of view. You come out already talking on stage. And I thought, oh, that's so interesting. I don't do that. But it wasn't like, wait a minute, you told me something. And da, da, da. Everybody's stuff kind of morphs and changes. And I feel like the more people get rigid, the more they don't know about their own personal evolution, or maybe it comes from fear, or maybe they were called out for trying a new concept. Or, you know what I mean? I'm always creating exercises based on frustration. Could I take 10 people off the street and have them improvising? Absolutely. Abso-fucking-lutely. With no rules whatsoever. I mean, the only thing I guess we basically agree on is it's going to be 72 degrees. Whether you want to find it too cold because you're from Florida, or I find it too hot because I'm menopausal, is beyond. You know what I mean? There's going to be a reason for the why. I'm just going to agree on the basics. That said, I have done a show with Mick where I was looking at a computer on one scene and said, oh my God, he said, look at this. And I said, oh my God, the Great Wall of China is beautiful. And he goes, it's not the Great Wall of China. And it was something else. And I remember thinking in that moment, oh, I think this must be like anal sex. Like, right, you just have to relax. You just have to relax. And as long as you hold down your side of the fort, you're going to be fine. You know what I mean? So that I trusted that comedy was still going to come out of it, whether he was fucking with me or not. I don't know what the gig was, but I know like playing with Mick is like playing with mercury. You know, you ever seen those, like the little mercury balls? If you ever seen an old fashioned thermometer, you're not supposed to touch that shit. I touched it, you know? So, you know, those are moments that become a little more meta. You know, like John and I were doing a show, and I think within the first 3 minutes, he had like swallowed the theme and spit it up in a ice sculpture, you know, the theme itself. And he just looked at me. I just kind of looked at him like this, and he said, too soon? I'm like, no, you do what you got to do. You know what I mean? But we're just having so much fun there. Fun creates fun. Joy begets joy. Nobody goes to a show and says, such left brain machinations. I understood none of it. Bravo. But what they do is they go, why is that woman standing that way? And then they see that woman again later on. They go, oh, that woman's back. I love that bitch. That's what they say. I can't imagine that the audience wants it as complicated as we've made it. Did I answer any question?
Yeah, hell yeah. Do we have a responsibility to the audience, Susan? Do we have to give them what it is they think they've showed up for? I don't know what the word is.
What did they show up for? What did we promise them?
Well, I don't know. I guess on the building there's a big horn or something, or somewhere outside there's a sign that says improv comedy. So are we?
I do understand that. But here's the good news. Comedy, when we go to a stand-up show, it's make me laugh, asshole. Improv is, ooh, what's happening? What's next? Why is she standing like that? Why'd you just do that? You know what I mean? Like, that's what we're fascinated with, is what's right in front of us, instead of going for the light of the laugh. Look, the only way for me to heighten funny is to be funnier, and good luck with that. And I'm not saying that I'm not a funny person and that I haven't been doing comedy for over 37 years. But the point being is it's coming from the consequence and of commitment and recommitment to your choices instead of funny choices. Like I said, when I say a funny choice, I have to like make that into truth, even if it's the weirdest, most bizarre truth ever. Until I believe it, the audience isn't going to believe it. They suck. That's that indication on your face as an improviser sometimes that is like, takes us completely out of enjoying the moment because we're worried about the improviser. That's why sometimes it's so hard to watch improv, because they are doing this correctly and we're watching it going, you know. I think somebody, these two sweet women from Switzerland saw my second to last show with Rachel, and they said, oh my God, I've never seen anything like it. It was so much fun. I said, oh, thank you so much. Why was it fun for you? She goes, I just believed the people and I couldn't wait to see them again and stuff. And I was like, yeah, that's how time just passes. And then I realized we've worked so hard, like doing these weird reps. I'm not exactly sure what the fuck we're doing. I feel like even now when I'm watching people teach improv, I'm looking at classes online and Facebook. You ever notice them? Like these new offerings. And it's like, a very kind protagonist that only lives in a field of poppies, you know, with their cohorts that can only be, you know, meconium covered tulips. I don't know. I mean, I'm like, it's so specific that the part of me that went, what the fuck? When I reframed it, I went, well, good for everybody. There's something for everyone out there. All I know is that I might have to do a pickup game with someone I've never met in my life that I don't even speak their language. And you know what? I'm not saying that ultimately you aren't going to do the kind of work you want to be doing with who you want to be doing it with. But my hope is that you'll be able to play with anybody. Because you're like, I can't wait to see you. And looking at the nod on, you know, the small nod on Sam's face and Jamie just doing this and Chris like that. That to me is far more interesting the way you look right now than inventing any better left brain premise. Do you know what I mean? I don't know. I say that a lot. Do you know what I mean? No, Susan, we don't. And that's why.
I think we do.
Try to be just a little more specific, lady, even though you did some Meconian covered tulips. That was impressive.
No, I mean, I love what you're saying because I'm trying to push myself more into this kind of place, right? Where it's, I'm reading what's going on right now in this moment that I can see, that the audience can see, that we can actually play with, as opposed to my, you know, invisible contraption in the corner that, you know, I can believe in, but it's not quite as exciting as what's going on between the people themselves on stage.
Hey, you know what? This is the other thing too, though. I was working with two guys yesterday. And one kept checking in. Stephen kept checking in with Brendan. And I said, I just stopped him. And I said, did you get a rule about you don't make enough eye contact? And he said, yeah. I said, you're checking in as an improviser, not the character. The character was defeated. He was over it. You really going to check in seriously with it? You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
That's, we drop our shit all the time. I don't even think the first 3 seconds of the scene, Rebecca Soane said this so wisely. She said, the first 3 seconds of the scene is your promise to the audience of who you will be. Not what the scene is. We shouldn't know what the scene is until it's over. You know what I mean? It's like, how the fuck did we get from here to here? That ride is far more fascinating to me. That's like saying, I've got 3 days, my best friend, amazing weed, salty snacks, sweet snacks, enough money to go to to scary motels where we're like, we got what we paid for. We could die here. You know what I mean? And then you get to Arizona versus we've got 5 hours to get to Prescott. Get in the car. I mean, what do you want? Do you want to fulfill a thesis or do you want to put two people in a world and see what the fuck happens with them line by line? So maybe what I've learned is that physical intelligence you're manifesting is far more interesting than anything you could fabricate. And if you want to not feel like yourself on stage, it's time for you to change your spine. And I'm talking like in the smallest detail so that that person speaks for you, as opposed to these are the characters I do. I feel like a couple shows ago, all of my men characters felt like a head with a trunk and little legs. All my men felt like that. And all my women felt like they were from Minneapolis. And I said to Rachel after the show, I said, I'm feeling crunchy. I'm not feeling loose. And I thought, great. That for me means it's time for me to go back to a movement class or take yoga or do a dumb dance class with a friend. And you know, it's going to happen. It's going to be unintentional comedy if I do it. But at the same time, I'm still going to do it to the best of my ability, which is going to make it even worse because I am the fat ballerina at the end of the line where you're just laughing at it, where you're just like, oh, she's trying so hard. But you know, but like it's, you know, you're just doing the best you can. But how cool that every day you can set yourself a goal just for you. You know what? I don't know what that energy is, but I'm going to match that person's energy. I never find Paul on stage. Tonight, I'm going to find Paul. I always seem to do the first scene. Why do I need to do the first scene? Maybe I'll do the second or the third scene. Do you know what I mean? Like shaking it up. I'm just going to match your energy. I'm not going to speak first. I'm always a first speaker. Maybe I'll speak second. You know what? I never use my world. I'm not only going to make sure I use my world, but that everything I use in that world is going to be metaphor or allegory for something else so that it's all, everything really gets used, reused, recycled, and repurposed. I'm not fucking around when I say, I don't like just to make the chicken. I want to make the chicken soup. Then I want you to put a smear of the chicken fat on a bagel. And then I want you to make wind chimes out of the fucking bones. That's where I am. Because what we do in this work is we fart and run, right? We fart and go, ooh, I farted. Eh. I'm like, no, you fart and say, I farted. 2 bean burritos, no cheese, extra fire sauce, Taco Bell on Clybourne. Boom. And yes, there's Taco Bell on Clybourne. But that's where I stay. And people hear me say this shit a lot. Because really, I'm saying it to myself. Because when you drop your shit, whether it's choices you've made because you've chosen not to like them because you didn't think they were funny or smart or cool, I guarantee you, your audience liked it until you dropped it. Add more. Ambiguity isn't going to create specificity, but that specificity will cure ambiguity and it'll get us off super, super hard. You are there because your imaginations are amazing. You're there because you're inspiring to me, you know? I don't look at somebody on stage and go, I look at them and I go, you are a source, but you're only one of three sources for me. I've got myself, my world, and my friend. And when we make it all about our friend, that's fucking creepy to me. Like they've got an amber alert on their head with the answer. They don't.
Yeah, we see that all the time, and they're calling it support. You know what I mean?
Do you think, but even then, what we can do is recycle even an improviser that's a deer in headlights improviser. You think I can't make that person a deer in headlights character? Then they become purposeful, and then they realize, oh, I'm actually emitting shit that she can see that we can use. I think that's what a lot of people think, is that I don't know what I have, or I don't have something funny to say. We don't get to decide what's funny in improv. The audience does. Isn't that, I think, find that weird as well. And don't get me wrong. I've done enough main stage sets in my life, or watched enough main stage sets in my life, to realize that some of those people are so witty that they can heighten funny simply by being funnier. But I've also likened that to a meal full of Pringles. You've eaten a meal full of Pringles before and you feel like an asshole. Like, yeah, I got full from a meal full of fucking Pringles. I'm an asshole. I see that. I say this all the time. But, you know, that I feel strongly about it. Like, I'm on one track on that. Because yeah. I'm not it. Look, if my whole revenue stream died tomorrow because everybody woke up and were the best improvisers in the world and had more fun than anyone else, I'd be like, my job here on Earth, along with a million other people, is done. And I would become the clinical child psychologist my mom wanted me to be, I guess, right? Or do something else. Or get high and watch bad TiVo episodes of Homestead Rescue, which I enjoy.
Jamie, yeah, that one's better.
Watched it. Water's a big deal, Jamie. It's a big.
It's funny, Susan. You mentioned this earlier, but I would be remiss if I didn't mention this. I have all my notes and shit, and I know, like, teaching stuff, rehearsals, yeah, whatever. But one of the things I have is when I was listening to a podcast, I have a quote from you that you think you just said, which was, I wrote, Susan Messing on Dell, your life is far more interesting than anything you could fabricate, which is funny. You mentioned that a moment ago. And then yeah. I have an arrow here. It says annoyance challenged this idea, which I think is so interesting. I think you were on the Second City podcast with Homeboy.
With Joe Canale, my ex-husband.
Your ex-husband, yeah. I've been on a team with Molly.
First one, a buried one. I'm ready for round three. Let's go, guys. Annoyance challenged Sharna's notion that Io was considered intelligent comedy. And Mick was saying, I don't think you get to determine what's intelligent or not. Whimsy is intelligent. Sam and I were just talking about, I could do that for 4 fucking hours. And you know what? If I did it on stage, you'd watch it and you'd get mesmerized. And even when you didn't want to, even if you're like, ew, 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 ew. It's like watching a car accident or Christian TV. So I'm not against different schools of thought. I think they're great. And remember, even the original school of thought of the annoyance was really twisted and perverse. But it wasn't in an ugly way. It was kind of like, remember when fifth graders learned fart and fuck? You know, and it's like the hot word. So like fuckingly became your adverb and you were so tickled with yourself. That's what the annoyance felt like to all of us. And then as times change and we become smarter and we also look at the landscape and say things that we found funny are no longer funny to us. I can't do three. I don't think we could bring back 3/4, maybe even more of the shows we've done in the past. Because it looked whimsical then, but now it might appear ugly. I'm not interested in alienating my audience. So by the nature, the whole annoyance, I thought, model was content was protected merely by coming into the building. And I'm like, nope, not anymore. Even my own show at the annoyance, which was over 11 years messing with a friend, which I don't do it all the time, but I do it a lot. I used to have it on a Thursday night at 10:30. That to me was the fuck you slot of all time. And talking about describing shows, when we were talking about protecting that as well, it was described as a joyful, uncensored, and improvised romp through hell. I could not have protected it enough. But even now, I want it to be later in a weird time. You know what I mean? Mm. Like, because I just want that protected. I don't know what that is, except that, again, for me to say our show was worsted, it was like dark as fuck. We still managed to protect it. I don't know how we did, but we did, because otherwise I'd come off stage going, that was not okay. Because I know that as well. I know that feeling as well. I came, my friend Colleen Murray and I once did a messing with a friend, 10:30 Thursday at the Annoyance. And I looked out in the house, and I never do. And I saw a young child. And I went to the house manager. I said, there's a kid in the audience. And he said, yeah, he's 11. His parents says he's seen everything. And I said, I don't care that he's seen everything. I don't. Okay, because these are the house rules. We don't want to say that somebody can't come if their parents say that they're okay to watch this. Everything that would have been considered fun and jovial and delightful and whimsical came out ugly, disturbing, and wrong. So I did kind of learn, no, I don't want that. And I'm not saying that I can't control myself. I mean, we talk to our grandparents differently than we talk to our best friends. A 7 p.m. family-friendly show, I'm up for it as well. I had to do that in Kansas City, where I turned to Mark Sutton. I said, we're doing a 7 p.m. show. They asked for messing with a friend. The fuck? And so we described it up top, a joyful, uncensored, improvised romp through hell. And I jokingly said, we might F around for a while. And they started laughing. And with that, I felt like we had permission to go where we might go.
Is that because you're setting the expectation that the audience is it's understood what they're here for? And once they understand, there is that permission for you to do what you please?
You'd think people would do their homework and know what they're walking into anyway. I also think that if somebody puts me at 7 p.m., I'm going to honor 7 p.m. versus good luck with that. Came out of my mouth and well, I'm owning it, but good luck. You know, it's more placement. It's again, there's a tacit permission that we give ourselves to talk to our friends differently than we talk to certain members of our family. We are able to navigate that space. I would think that we have control over that versus I'm a comedian, deal with it. Yeah, I'm like, no. Yeah, but if you want comedy as a result, you might want to protect that shit. So yes, for the comedy fix, and you think about the stand-ups that you know that you have watched not do well with the audience for a minute. They just kind of booed something or something like that. And the comedian got mad and turned on them. And then all of a sudden they've alienated the entire audience. Mm-hmm. Do you feel good about that guy? Mm. You know what I mean? Did that help? Because that didn't protect the content. And if you didn't, you call yourself out. You know, you say, I mean, I've seen people do that where it doesn't work. And then the almost the apology or explanation afterwards is what created the joke. You're like, oh, that didn't work. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, and that's making you happy. Yeah. Because we're not stupid. We're all watching it. And I'm also not saying that our audiences are terrific. I know that at Second City, that ETC show that had so much trouble that they felt that the actors weren't protected by the audience, who felt like they were more Trumpy and gave themselves far more permission to be rude and obnoxious. It's really weird when you're dealing with social and political satire. I don't know.
For sure. And that's written as well. So it's like, it's understood that they know what they're saying and doing. Real quick, Susan, I imagine you see more students in scenes than you do see shows. I'm making that assumption. You teach a bunch, you coach
a lot. It's true. I definitely see more students than I see shows. It's hard for me sometimes to watch improv if I'm not performing it. And if it's the show before mine, I sort of don't want it to bleed into my shit, because you know, the last thing you talk about is the first thing that happens, or, you know, last things you watch. I don't want to like retread on somebody's shit and not give them the respect they deserve. So yeah, that prevents me from watching a lot.
So when you're watching your students in workshop and classes, all this stuff, you know, there's a lot of clunkers out there. People trying their best. They're coming to you for help and stuff. What sparks you every now and then? You see, you know, just a beginning or whatever level stage of improviser, they're coming to you. I'm speaking from experience. I see a lot of like stuff that isn't working, whatever. What are those moments that pop for you? You go, oh shit, this is it. This is different. Like, do you ever get a moment in class? I'm sure you do, but like, what are those moments for you when I don't know how to word this better than like, when something pops for you, what is happening?
Is it popping in a negative or a positive?
No, place? positive. When you go, wow, this is really special. This is something, this is a moment. What's occurring in those moments?
What's occurring to me is it's usually fulfilling all the things I love to see. For example, specificity, which means that somebody is giving themselves permission to express themselves. That's exciting. But I don't want to say a bold choice, because it means like, I feel like every scene's going to start with someone like jamming their head into a wall or something.
Sure.
But when they make a choice and don't drop it and then get to see the payoff, I actually saw that yesterday. It was a tiny baby one for me, and these guys never would have known it. But at the top of the scene, one guy had his hands in his pockets, and he kept his hands in his pockets the whole scene, and they start talking about something, and then the guy's like, yeah, I'm coming up empty. I have nothing right now. And there was something where that person almost felt paralyzed by the situation. And I stopped it and I said, your hands are in your pockets and you feel paralyzed. You're not moving. You're not doing anything. I said, that to me is the discovery of, oh, that's why my hands were in my pockets. Because if he had known it at the top of the scene, he would have written that shit, right? But right. You know what I mean? Like those tiny moments of discovery of that for them, or that I get to discover it in the audience, which reminds me that the audience is a lot more patient than we think. Mm. When you're waiting for the light of the laugh, I mean, when my audience isn't laughing, it doesn't mean they're not fascinated. There's stuff going on. They're watching me do things. They're like, sometimes the laugh is, you know, because my character having a horrible puberty or whatever the fuck it is. But it's just like, oh, that to me is just as valid. So when I get to see people giving themselves permission, even dare I say, to look stupid, because people don't like to look stupid. Sure. Nobody likes to look stupid. I don't like to look stupid, but my characters don't mind being stupid. And I also don't mind being stupid in life now, because that's unintentional comedy. So see how I reframe that? So even my stupid is covered now. So when I see people being conscious of self, like they've taken that self-conscious feeling and reframed it as being conscious of self. Oh, my shoulders are back. If I put them back again, I'll feel like that guy again. Got it. Then I get really happy. I get happy that people don't just commit. I love it when people recommit, when they think, I can tell because I know an improviser brain, when they think it's going south, but they went, God damn it, Susan said, just fuck that shit till it's dead, even though I hate this shit. And then they do it and it works and they're like so happy, because what that did was make them understand then the whole concept of, you were right, you just didn't know why yet. And that to me is mind-blowing. And that never ends. Or when I just see someone in the audience, just like in class, just nodding. And I'm like, I know your struggle. You've also taken the nice note. You've also taken the really shitty note that sent you home depressed. And I'm going, why are we doing this to people? Because you can have status? Because you might get laid? I don't know what the fuck people are doing. That you aren't leaving class going, I stretched myself today. I learned something. Like, it wasn't always easy and I'm dealing with archaic shit in my head. But when I turn down that dial and recommit to the scene, I guarantee there's a fucking payoff there all the time. And remember, it's not just one game anymore. When I played with Matt Besser in San Francisco, I was worried because I didn't want to fuck up his game, because UCB's all about the game. But then I realized I can play his game, but I also have a game for me that nobody can control but me, you know, my body, and a game for the way that I deal with the world. So I'm busy. So I'm not going to fuck up his shit, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the things I really loved about the annoyance training, and Philly has an improv book club, and we're reading Mick's book this month. And it's just so much fun to sort of tell students I'm coaching, like, you don't have to worry about what the other person is doing. Find something you want to do, find something that you're having fun doing, and just do that. And it's really cool when you have two people doing it, and then all of a sudden they're both having fun, and they find a way for their funds to kind of interact with each other and intersect. And like, that's the scene. Like, that's the scene that I really enjoy seeing.
I love that too. But I also know that there's that feeling of, I hope my shit works with your shit. Mm. We want to connect with people now. Now we can do things that connect us to people. So if you're like doing that, I might join in. It's a brand new choice for me. You know what I mean? And you're going, oh, you're doing my shit. And I'm like, I had no shit. So this is brand new for me. So we get to be a like-minded person, but we get to have our own brains attached. Mm-hmm. So for those people that you don't understand how to play with, see what happens when you try on their energy. See what happens if you both do the same activity, dare I say. By the way, none of this is right. It's just a suggestion when you feel like alone in a group of people. There's no worse feeling for me as an improviser than feeling alone in a group of people. So now I do things that connect me to people. And now I also don't stand around waiting for my turn to talk. Remember that? Somebody says something funny. Second person says something funny. Third person says something funny. I'm the one doubled over with colitis-like symptoms going, motherfucker, I'm number four. That's always been me. And so one time we had a scene where it was such a stupid scene. It was, if we don't paint the room by three, we're all going to die. And everybody was ready with their funny comments, and they were funny as fuck. And they were heightening funny by being funnier. And all I kept thinking was, I don't got anything funny to say. I don't want to die. I'm going to paint the room. And all I did, the whole scene, was paint the room. And by the end of the scene, I could smell the paint. I enjoyed the feeling of that crisscross action. I like gave it, you know, it was non-toxic shit because it was a baby's room. I just went to town on myself. Nobody had to know it. I was busy. And I'm sorry, if you want people to look at you, go do something. No offense, because it's a visual art. And I'm not that person who goes, do something. You know what I mean? I did it upstage because that's where that belongs. But it felt really great to be busy. So I didn't have to wait to play where I already was on stage, where I could be playing. Yeah. People bulldoze me and meow, meow, meow. And I'm like, well, you're waiting to talk. That's your problem. If you figure out a way to do something, you'll figure it out. If I've used this as an example a million times. If all I did in this scene, oh, gross, was play with a booger. That's all I fucking did. That's all I did in the whole scene. And then you didn't see me in that next group scene. You'd be like, where's Booger Girl? Because it's always about people. It's not, did you stick your landing in this scene? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's what happens when it's just scene after scene after scene after scene. I appreciate the annoyances, joy to the art. I also worry sometimes, because we've been there for a while too, that people will be like, ah, I've now decided it's, you know, I've given it its own cognitive, what is it? When it's its own institution. So therefore it has its own, this is the annoyance way, kind of like Chicago style pizza. You know what I mean? It's its own thing. I think the annoyance is changing too. I think I feel like you need to kind of expand and contract based on what you need for that minute, that day, or whatever. This is what we do in that theater. Well, good luck with that, because some things are going to change, and then you're going to feel bad that your theater didn't do exactly what its thesis statement was. And I'm going, but it's improv. So things might change, or something that you hated in the past might be amazing. I remember playing with Eddie Furman on main stage. And Eddie Furman is one of the most brilliant comedic men on the planet. I mean, Mick has said he's like the funniest man in Chicago. He's probably one of the funniest men anywhere. And he was in the main stage cast with me. And I was like, how do I play with Eddie Furman? I can't figure it out. Eddie had never taken an improv class in his life, and he landed on main stage. And I was like, how did this happen? I know I play by these rules, and Eddie just plays. Like, how do I play with that? Took me 3 years to figure this stupidity out, because that's how stupid I am. Eddie does what Eddie does, and I do what I do, and it all works out fine. The audience will fill out shit on their end. They really do. So I used to get very worried, like, he doesn't play the way I play. Who cares? Nobody cares. nobody fucking cares.
I have a question about, you know, like ensemble politics, because
I am. Yeah.
It's like, how have you managed 37 plus years? No, I'm just kidding. But when you, you know, all of what you're saying speaks to me, and I know it speaks to a lot of people, to like take care of yourself, do what's fun for you, find your own place in the scene, and do what you want to do.
The ensemble doesn't want it, Jamie.
They don't want it. Yeah, exactly. They're not, they feel unsupported. Feelings get hurt because you're not playing by, you're not fulfilling their thesis, as you say. You know, how do you navigate those politics where, like, you know, you're not intending to hurt people's feelings, but people's feelings get hurt because you're not doing what they want you to do, you know?
Well, you can't control other people, so maybe people ought to relax their crack on that shit, number one. Here's the thing that I always say about ensembles. You're going to find your scapegoat. That person, you know, Benny, he just, you know, like stomp everything, or meow, 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 whatever the fuck it is. So Benny gets finally kicked off your team. You know who's the common denominator? You. You're next. When I stopped blaming other people for me not joining in joy, then it became a lot better. If my artistic ideas are so off from my friends, I don't want to be the struggle. I don't want to be their problem. It might not be, dare I say, the right fit for me. How many times have you tried to do some sort of really tough left brain form, you know, because your coach or your friends thought it would be a really good idea for you guys to do that? And you're struggling and it's unfun and it's too left brain and it just not doesn't work for you. Maybe it just doesn't work for you. The only show I've ever quit in my life was an annoyance show for the Chicago Improv Festival. We had been accused sort of being too loosey-goosey for the fancy CIF. And so Mick decided, oh yeah, I'm going to fucking like make this the most rigid piece of God fuck you that you've ever seen. And at the time, Mick was really interested in math. Really interested in math. And when Mick's interested in something, it becomes a passion, and then he becomes an expert at it. He liked electricity, rewired our entire building, and safely too. You know what I mean? He's that guy. So at the time, you would see 11 and a half by 17 pages of yellow lined paper all over the theater with math problems on it. Just one math problem on the whole fucking page. And he was taking us through rehearsals, and okay, if two people said the word that, it ended up becoming something that probably looks like trigger happy, where there's internal cues in the show itself that only the improvisers know about. But this was really crazy ass. It was like, if you say the word the, then two people move downstage left, and then a chair has to go to center the minute somebody asks a question, or da da da. Like, it was insane. And I remember coming out of rehearsal so exhausted and so despondent. And I picked up off of Mick's desk one of those long math problems, and I said, is this our show? And then I quit it. It was the only improv show I've ever quit in my life, because I realized I can play like other people do. Like, for example, when I play with guys who play really fast, I can play really fast. Would I like to vary up tempo and shit? Sure. I probably play, depending on who I'm playing with, I play differently with whoever I'm playing with, because I'm sure my brain starts working with the way theirs works. I think I'm Susan Messing, deal with it. You know what I mean? I'm like, I just can't wait to play with you and we'll see what happens. But there have been moments where I've had to leave a group dynamic because I don't think I can serve it. But at the same time, I don't want to relinquish what I do love about playing and the love about the way I play. Does that sort of answer it, Jamie? Here's the other thing though. People will blame everyone for their misfortune. They will, it's his fault. He said that, she did that. I'm like thinking, all the best improvisers I've ever seen don't blame other people for their shit. So something must be going on with that person as well. I'm not saying that that person, that one of those people isn't doing something that if we are physically endangering people, sexism, homophobia, and racism, never been funny, never will be. Got it. Those things are dangerous because that doesn't endear us to you, because you have not evolved as a human being. But I have made such stupid jokes. That Homentoshin joke that I made, Dave Rozowski picked it up and turned it into art. He turned it into brilliance because he didn't judge it the way I did. So our self bullshit is far worse than most of the bullshit other people have to me, but you did it. You remember when you said, what do you want to talk about today? One of the things, and I said, let's just see what the fuck happens. One of the things I'm curious about, and maybe you can tell me, is, and maybe the world can tell me, because I haven't gotten an answer yet, is what is the road back when someone has fucked up in our systems? What's the road back? Because I understand the righteous indignation. I understand that might have even happened to you, that shit that person pulled, and it might have happened to you from that person, or it just triggers you from another person. I hate the word trigger, but you know what I mean. But yeah, I'm dying to know, how do people get to come back to our world when, based on your Jamie thing saying, you know, when your world doesn't like the shit you're doing? I'm talking about like behavioral bad shit. How do people come back? What are your thoughts, white men?
It's a good question. It's a good question. And I think I even read an article recently about like cancel culture. And they're talking about that is people cancel other people, you know, shut them out. And then there's no room for contrition. There's no room to like make amends and kind of work your way back into, you know, society's good graces. It's like, once you're out, you're out. And I think that extremity is satisfying to people. And, you know, you're asking a good question. Cause to me, I feel like I'm open. Like if I see people who like, you know,
genuinely,
I look for people's intentions. You know, you judge them based on their actions, but I really try to look at their intentions. So if I see that, oh, you know, they said something they didn't know, they were unaware, they were ignorant. A lot of it comes from, I think, ignorance. And
it does, but a lot of people double down on their ignorance. And I also know that a lot of people do really bad things. I know one guy who was accused of a lot of shit, who came back years later with just a long email doubling down on that they were wronged. And I'm going, were you? I don't think you were wronged. I wish you kind of came back and said, this is what I've done. I've taken classes in X, or, you know, I've worked with these people and now I understand more. And I don't know. I don't know.
That's tough.
It's weird, right? Like, and again, and Jamie, you talk about intentions. You look at intentions as well, but intentions apparently in this world are not enough. If you say something and your intent was to be kind, but it came off in a way that somebody was upset by it, your intentions don't matter. It is that you hurt the other person. And I do understand that. And I remember, I have to evolve. I come from a real suck it up generation. In my case, in order to stay on stage, you shut up and you take it. That's what I did, because you either fucked him or you got raped. That's your choice. That was my choice. I remember like in the 2000s, some woman, talking about a guy who everybody knew was a pain in the fucking ass in a million different ways. And she said, yeah, I don't want to be groped by him. I don't want to da da. And I'm like, yeah, you shouldn't have to be. And I'm going, that's weird. I was, do you know what I mean? Like I thought, oh, well, I get to be a fly on the wall in comedy. I'm so fucking lucky. I appreciate, I'm learning from my students. I'm learning from the powers that be in institutions that say we have a no tolerance policy for X, Y, and Z. I'm just wondering, when someone fucks up, you cause meet effect. What's the effect? That their life is destroyed for the rest of their life, when they could have been just, like you said, learning a lesson. I don't know. I didn't want to even bring this up today, but I thought everything I say sounds the same. And this is something I've been thinking about that's different.
An important question. I mean, it's, I think something you said earlier about like, you have to own your shit, right? And I think that's the first step, right? You have to kind of own what you've done. Intention.
I didn't know that. Da da da. I didn't. And don't get me wrong, I'm not like babysitting people. When somebody came up to me after class once and said, that cancer scene really triggered me. And I said, is it okay if you tell me why, just so I can support you? And they said, yeah, of course. My mom is going through cancer treatment and my brother's going through cancer treatment. And I said, that's so interesting. I said, my dad died of cancer. My husband's battling it right now. My sister just died unexpectedly of breast cancer. I said, but that didn't trigger me. Isn't it interesting what will trigger us at different times in our life. I know that when my husband was sick, he couldn't watch the news. After a certain point, he's like, I have to watch the British baking show or something kind. I just, these are my limits right now. These are my boundaries right now. And I thought, how amazing that people are learning theirs. I remember one of the things in Mick's books, he says, Susan Messing will do anything on stage. The only reason I'm able to do anything on stage, and I mean almost just about anything, I don't know what I wouldn't do. I'm not exactly sure. Please don't test me. But I remember what I did was I made sure that I delineated the difference between Susan Messing on stage and the character. And the minute I stopped making it personal Susan, I was fine with it. Because on stage, you know, fuck with me. Off stage, don't you dare. Then I started going, okay, there's my power. But there's so many people who are so triggered by it that you have to do things that are, you know, specialty improv with a protagonist in a field of poppies with a, you know what I mean? Like you have to almost do that because that's their safe space. Just like I want to only do Sondheim-based musical forms or I only want to do da-da-da-da-da. I don't care. I just, my stuff is about as organic as it gets. It ends up for some strange reason looking like a comedic one-act play. I know it's placement, but it still feels like magic. And that's, and as long as I feel like the ability to do that, I will continue to do that, the joy of that. And yes, there are days that are harder. So all, everything's all piled. Oh my God, you guys, life's a herald. And yeah, I should be canceled maybe or not. I don't know. I mean, I think the only thing that keeps me from not being canceled with some old archaic thinking is that my thinking evolves. And that I learned. So Chris, one of the things you were like is what is an aha moment? When a student tells me something about where they are in terms of their life and boundaries, oftentimes that's a, oh my God, you're allowed to do that. That's amazing. Like yeah. Even then it's still, you are, it's not even me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know. And again, I'd much rather create a safe cushy place to land than go fuck yourself. You know, I know what I'm doing. Like people, the only people who need to be berated in class for me are people who put people in really bad positions. Mm. That be a physical position or emotionally that they just cannot read the room or cannot read the room. Then I have to, and even then I don't want to do it in front of the entire class. Oops, sorry. Someone heard it there. I'm not interested in humiliating people because I'm the line leader holding the Purell. I feel like it's weird. I feel like there's even more of a responsibility now, which you probably are starting to see when you come into a classroom. Now, Rachel was saying to me, you are no longer teachers, you're facilitators. Even that's changed it. You see how that's, well, from my perspective, if you want to know my opinion, it's not tacit, it's not come in and learn messing shit. I am always reading the room and there's always somebody, there's always one guy in the front who does this. And I'm like, oh man, I'll rip assholes and take prisoners in a few minutes. And then by the end of class, he'll be like, you know, milking a goat or whatever the fuck. But it's always the beginning. Prove it, bitch.
Susan, we've talked a lot about evolving and stuff. And like, you've come from like all these years and all these different generations and these different, like, this is popular, this is popular. It's those two. This is the one, SNL, blah, blah, blah. Are you genuinely excited for the future of specifically long form improvisation? Do you see it evolving to a place of like new heights, or do you feel like it's maybe because of some of these new ideas that will like get stunted on its way towards growth?
We have growing pains. The good news is we're growing, and the bad news is that it's painful. I never got tall, so you probably remember literal growing pains growing up where you're like, Jesus, my legs just hurt. Yeah. Like people like that. I think there's growing pains. I think the good news is we're growing. The bad news is it's painful. And I think we're going to lean real hard to the left before we become a little more centrist in that. I think what's going to be exciting about improv is not anything other than the people involved in it. I think people keep acting like they've invented the wheel. And I'm going, nobody's reinventing a wheel. I think, look, I'm so honored that people, you know, are saying to themselves, yeah, I'll get out of, I'll take my hand off my dick. I'll close up the computer. I'll get in an Uber and I'll get in the seats. That is my affirmation, not the light of the laugh. So I'm always excited and grateful. And it's only when it becomes that gerbil wheel of exhaustion. Oh, just another rehearsal, just another class, just another show. That's honestly, that's a great indication that you simply need a break. You need a break. The weirdest thing about that too, is you come back, no classes, no rehearsals and shows, and you're a better improviser. Mm. Amazing. Because some of that shit's just sticking to you. Or maybe you actually got a life to try out on stage. That's why I do understand that joy of falling down the rabbit hole. We all fell down the rabbit hole. And then it got really fucking clunky. And then you felt bad about yourself. And then you hated your friends. And then your teacher was full of shit. And then that theater sucked moose cock. And then blah, 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 blah. Always. When that's why I say, if you're not having fun, you're the asshole. Not for not having fun where you are, but not placing yourself in a space that you are going to assume trust, assume safety, because you have to. You have to. Because I don't tell people shit, you know, what, in a relationship? 6 months after the relationship starts, you go, okay, here's the creepy card. I'm like, no. How many times have you seen some like major ass monologues and shit? I just have to assume the audience is on board. Granted, as always, if your monologue is only something you would declare to DCFS, the Department of Children and Family Services, or shrink and nobody else, please don't share, because I'm not a trained professional. And I advise teachers who want to go there too. I just can't wait for my students to start crying. Why? Why? What are you getting out of that? Hmm.
Susan, let me ask you, specifically with your cancer example, with that person who came up to you after the show or the class or whatever that was.
I didn't apologize for it. And I didn't stop the scene, because the scene wasn't making fun of people with cancer. It was kind of actually taking the fucking guts out of cancer. Like when my friend Laura Kraft once did a scene in ETC where she said, this is a different example, but it was the same, a certain kind of approach where she, her character loved having cancer because she lost a lot of weight. Everybody felt sorry for her. They saw her all the time. They sent her flowers. She went on dates. Like, this cancer was the best thing that ever happened to her, or something like that. And somebody came up to her after the show and he said, I have cancer. And Laura just braced herself to get ripped a new asshole. They said, thank you for taking the power out of cancer. Thank you for saying, you know, fuck cancer, like, but really. And that was just a wonderful moment. You right. never know how someone's going to respond. Comedy is very, very subjective. And that's when we try to make it kind of like homogenous, is when the weirdness is going to start. And what's going to make improv exciting again is by the nature that the people who are excited about doing it.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask, because that was an interesting example. So somebody comes up to you and says, you know, they're, you know, sensitive triggered. About cancer, triggered by cancer, and you artistically, you know, don't feel that way about the cancer topic. Is that a moment for you then to change yourself, or do you keep going? And like, when does the evolution occur, when you decide to change with the times versus when you just double down on your shit? You know, like, how do we navigate that?
We certainly have an epiphany. What I discovered is that everybody has different triggers. And that we can't accommodate the world. It can't be a padded cell. And to recognize that everybody's going to be in a different space. That's different than me change my whole attitude and way of working. I definitely know that things that I was more rigid about, I'm not anymore. Things like being late. If you were late to my class at IO, I locked the fucking door because I was like, this is ensemble work. Get the fuck out of here. Like, I'm not dealing with your arrogance of being late. And then I realized, you know what? People are late. What are you going to do? Nothing can be changed. I stopped becoming didactic about a few things, but there's other things that I'm trying to think of something that somebody like that everybody else in the world has been on board with, but I went, I'm not doing it. I don't think there's anything that I haven't been able to. I mean, our job is to be malleable, right? So, you know, I try that. Look, I was raised on uncensored comedy, but at the same time, I dealt with a bunch of people in Kansas City that actually worked they do a lot of family friendly shows. And they do a lot of shows for Christian audiences. And I was like, oh my. But you know, I didn't say anything of what I do. And they said, yeah, a lot of the guys in the group were having this trouble. They're just shooting everybody on stage. it's happening a lot. And I said, yeah, I think they're frustrated. I said, you know what I would suggest you do? I would suggest once a month, play at a dumb bar in the middle of buttfuck that has nothing to do with Christian colleges. And let me know if that helps. She didn't even know why. So they did. She goes, oh my God, they stopped killing each other. I'm like, yeah, because they're letting off a little steam at a bar. You know what I mean? But at the same time, it's just so stupid. But I don't know. I mean, I'm always trying something and seeing what sticks versus this is right. Because everybody learns differently. My daughter learns completely differently than I do. Completely differently than I do. So I'm honoring where people say, these are my boundaries. I'm also inviting them to say, you might want to see what happens when you step over them. Because the only boundary I ever had on stage, remember I said, I'll do anything on stage. The one thing I asked my team was, please don't make me give birth on stage. Because my friend Rich Label came through my vagine with a lit cigarette, because that's how old we are. We were allowed to smoke on stage. And he was like, hey, mom. And I said, you know, one day I'm going to give birth and this is going to be my memory. I don't want this. So I said, I feel vulnerable and stupid. You guys know I'll do anything else. Just honor me that. And my team did. Everybody did. I only had to say it once or twice in my life. Cut to 12 years later, I'm on the main stage of Second City in the cast. And my friend Stephanie Weir has people tumbling out of her like the Jesse White tumblers, doing flips and handstands together. And I mean, it was just beautiful. And I was just watching all these people tumble out of Stephanie. And I thought to myself, God damn, I wish I could do that. And then I went, bitch, you gave yourself your own rule. So I feel like these restrictions are more put on by ourselves based on something bad that happened to them once upon a time. And I feel that that's valid. And I feel like I hope they have good therapy. And I hope everybody has the mental care that they need and the physical care that they need. And I'm not saying a lot of people haven't done really bad things to lots of people, because they have. In my case, a lot of women just left improv, really. I just was kind of more masochistic in that sense. And I thought, oh, maybe I deserve this hard note, or I deserve this hard ride. I didn't. Mm. Nobody does. And maybe that's what I can bring back as a teacher. And that also lends into the epiphany as well, is when I see, gosh, really, when you adjust your semantics, Susan, I always adjust my semantics for my students, but when you adjust your semantics, you'll get the result you want. And they get to think they made up, they did all of that. But really, I just put it in a nice piece. I put the pill in a, what's it called? A pill pocket for you, you know? And so you were able to do it. And as opposed to that dry ass exercise that everybody keeps doing, hoping for a better or more interesting result, it still sucks just as bad. When I stop thinking of freeze tag as my opportunity to say a joke and then be stuck there for the rest of my fucking life, because I was standing there and I had nothing to inspire anybody to want to freeze it, I started going, huh, what if freeze tags were just little scenes? And what if it really was about just honoring the body position instead of having a funny joke? And so they were always just little worlds and little scenes. And then all of a sudden I was getting like tagged out all the fucking time because I was in a new world, new world, new world. And everything I was doing was inspiring to my friends because I was actually doing something that would inspire somebody. You know what I mean? And that started with me reframing it to talk myself in. But I also had a teacher that used to hit us with a rolled up newspaper on Saturday mornings at 10 a.m. The fuck is that about? It was some sort of competitive game. And I was a young improviser. And I remember thinking, maybe one day I'll be a teacher and I won't hit people with a rolled up newspaper. And I'm going, why the fuck was I hit with a roll? I should have stopped the exercise immediately and said, why are we doing this? I hope all students ask what these exercises, what's the point? I hope they ask what's the point now. I don't mind them questioning us. It's their money. It's their time. And when I know why I'm doing something, maybe I'll want to do it a little more. Sometimes you don't know. Sometimes you can say, yeah, we could discover what this is all about. But, you know.
That's awesome. My last question for you, Susan, have you ever heard of me? Have you heard of Chris Alvarado? Yeah. You have?
Yes.
Oh, hell yeah. Cool. That was my question. Yeah.
That's a good question.
Thanks. Thank you. Sam?
Jamie? So, Jamie's like, oh, do you know Chris? I was like, yeah, I know who Chris is.
Oh, hell yeah. Hell yeah. Cool. That was nice for me.
Me again. It's been a while, you know. So how did you three get together in order to say, let's discuss this shit? What made you say, this is what we want to talk about? Because I think it's great.
I think it came from, these two were working together and I was coaching them, and I had all my philosophies and all my stuff, and I was very like, yep, pay me and I know what I'm talking about. And then these guys kept fucking with these ideas, or Jamie would say, why? And I'm, well, and then he'd go, well, what? No. And it sounds like he was being rude. I mean, it was just really, I had never, what? Because this is the way we've been doing it. Because these are the rules. Because blah, 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 blah.
It's challenging you.
Yeah. And it sounds embarrassing to say now that that's how I don't know if I was rigid, but that's just what I believed. And then that led into so many conversations in the rehearsal space that blew my mind. I really appreciated and loved that these two young dudes, it doesn't matter their age, but just these, I have much more experience than them in improvisation. And I just love them for kind of cracking my brain open. And then we said, let's talk about this for everybody. Is that right, Jamie, Sam?
You know, it's interesting too. I'm not, I don't coach that often. And a week and a half ago, I was doing a workshop at The Annoyance, just a quickie, like an hour and a half one. And afterwards, one of them came up to me and said, hey, do you ever do coaching? And I always say no. I do, because I'm like, I don't usually have the time or whatever, I'm touring. And I said, I don't know, I might be able to stomach a little bit. Why? And that's why I met with them yesterday, is like, you know what? And it's Chris so that I can learn more. It's yeah. Absolutely. Because our strengths are also declaring where we're weak. Or that's why can't we say that's a really good question? That's a really good question. Let's explore that versus yeah. I guess maybe that is where someone truly becomes a facilitator instead of someone who becomes more and more rigid.
Absolutely.
About and they go, it's the Susan Mashing way or the happy way. I can't even imagine anybody saying that to me, because I'll call myself out before you ever have a fucking chance. You know what I mean? Should I cancel myself right now? There is a road back for me. Just not be enough.
Cancel yourself just to see what that road back looks like.
Yeah. Yeah, that's how you find it, right? You have to discover that road yourself.
What, Sam?
You'll have to discover the road yourself. That's how you'll find it.
No, it's not even going to be a road with a name. It's going to be like County Line X7. And then it just ends up in a field with bodies. Oh, man.
I mean, we've taken up a lot of your time. Unless Sam, Jamie, anything else you want to talk about?
They have questions. They have their final questions.
Yeah, you have your final questions.
Don't yuck their yum.
You're Why right. don't we quick? I'm just curious, because we were talking about exercises. What's an exercise, Susan, that you hate and why, if anything? I'm just curious if anything comes to mind.
I don't know if there's one I hate. I really, yeah, I will say this. I'm not a big fan of competitive improv in general.
Mm.
Someone has to win. I'm always the person who, like, even when we would play celebrity at The Annoyance, I'd be the one holding the stopwatch because I didn't want to get yelled at. So, and there are other exercises that I guess I turned on their head to make myself happy. Like, I have an exercise where you have to die, but it came out of an exercise Dell did that if you fucked up the exercise, you had to die. So I found myself deliberately fucking up the exercise so I could die. And it wasn't, they're not allowed to be suicides. I learned that on my teaching watch, that they can't be suicides, even though on stage, I think it can be funny. But again, it's not apparently at all. So, cause it's not. And so they have to be accidents, but really it's object work covered in a piece of cheese, right? And heightening is to death. And so it made people do object work. So it's kind of like things that talk me. So all exercises can be good if they talk me into doing things that I might need to stretch it more. You know what I mean? Cause sure. I'm feeling lately I've been feeling a little rigid. My body's been feeling rigid. So since my body's been feeling rigid, that means that I'm doing extra service with my brain. And that's why my brain hurts a little bit after a show. Sometimes I'm like, if I did more shit, I'd be making discoveries. My words would be coming based on this versus here's something. And that's a lot for my little brain. So I guess there's not one that I hate as much as I'm going to cover it in flowers and pixie dust. Yeah.
I like that answer better than if you had just named an exercise that you hate.
It leads into my final question pretty well too, because I'm curious how you stretch yourself as a performer. You've kind of mentioned challenges or taking, you know, movement or yoga. Do you do exercises by yourself or rehearse or anything else that you stretch yourself?
No, I mean, I know TJ and Dave still have rehearsals. God knows what they're rehearsing. And God, to get better, you know, maybe one day they'll get good. You know, it's no, you know what I mean, even before the show, I'll ask who I'm playing with just about their day, just because I'm interested in their day, which, you know, be careful what you talk about, because it usually does end up on stage, even though you don't. That's why you don't say things like, you guys, no walk-ons tonight. Seriously, no walk-on. No, seriously, Jamie, no walk-on. Because the first thing that will fucking happen is Jamie will walk on. You know what I mean? Because you can't help it. No mm-hmm. means yes. So that's why I don't even, I will say, what do I need right now? But I know what I need. You know what I need. You know that if you don't understand what's going on in the world right now and you feel really, really closed and your whole life is just Real Housewives, then maybe it's time to be a little more expansive, unless you're doing Real Housewives improv, and then God bless and Godspeed, you're great at it. I just think that you sort of know after a while, don't you? I'm like, yeah. I don't want to be physically rigid, because so much of that physical intelligence informs me and my friend. So if it feels samey, I got to change it up. And they can happen in such subtle ways as well. That's exciting. Maybe if I'm like almost eating it too fast, the show, I get to control pitch and tone. So maybe if everything seems to go, it's just energy, but then it ends up flatlining the same energy, then I might, you know what? That scene was really slow. Pick it up next time. You know what I mean? Like, so I can all I'm doing is manipulating myself through space and not controlling my friend. Just because I spoke first doesn't mean it's my scene. It's our scene. You know, Miles once said to me, Chris, you're in LA, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Miles once said to me, man, I'm so glad you knew exactly what I needed in that scene, Susan. I said, man, I'm glad I knew exactly what you needed in that scene too. But if I didn't, it'd be fine, because it's our fucking scene.